Yes. I'm calling the meeting to order at 7:30 PM. And I am appointing Kwan Gordon for Arlene Fiano. I'm appointing Tom Crockett for Jeremy Flick. And I am appointing Diane D'Annunzio for Jim Cropley. Okay, the next item is approval of minutes.
I make a motion to accept the minutes as is.
Move Tom Crockett, is there a second?
I'll second.
Second Tom Robbins. Is there any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
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 Okay, they are approved. Residents forum, we have one resident. And if you have anything that you want to talk about that is not on the agenda, which is just about every topic in the world. Thank you, okay. No one wants to speak. Staff reports.
I'll start. You have received a PDF copy and they are now live on the town's website, which I believe I also sent a link to, and that is the codified zoning regulations. The print version will be around shortly, which I will get out to those who asked for it. Moved on to the subdivision regulation review, and probably halfway or a little better than that, so that you should be seeing those for the or hopefully before the next meeting for a little review. Mike and I met with somebody interested in doing possibly an over 55 development in town. I don't know how eminent it is, but there was discussion about it on at least one property. I had to take fishing training. And other than that, we've been working on the zoning issues memo that you got that we're going to discuss later on tonight.
And has the, you know, I was asked for an interpretation about chickens versus poultry. I didn't pass it on to the members, but did you want to talk about that at all? I understand there was an inquiry.
We can. Essentially, the zoning regulations have requirements for the keeping of farm animals and establish minimum lot sizes. Included in those criteria are references to poultry. Later in the section, it makes reference to hens and says basically it has a specific allowance for someone to have up to 6 hens on a residential property without needing all of the other siting criteria that the other farm animals would require. There's a woman who is lived in Bolton, owns property in Bolton, and is planning to move back and has more ducks that she'd like to be able to relocate with her when she comes back. And she's got almost the 2 acres, but doesn't have the 2 acres. So the discussion that we had with her was could the term hens be interpreted more widely so that she could have the four ducks on her property, which is the question that I posed to the chairman, or we posed to the chairman last week.
Okay, how close is she to having the 2 acres? Is it like 1.9 or 1.5 or?
I don't know off the top of my head. I don't know that it's not like 1.9.
I hated to make the interpretation that I did, which is that chickens means chickens, and it doesn't apply to all poultry. And I was part of the discussion when this was created, because there was this general trend around, we want to keep chickens. People in different places wanted to keep chickens. And under the standard regulation for 2 acres, people were saying, we can't even have chickens. So this specific exemption for chickens was created.
And only so many chickens.
And only so many.
Up to six.
Yeah. Right.
And they have to be hens, right?
Right,
no roosters.
So I do have a question. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
So I don't recall the section of the zoning. I don't know if it was like section 8D or 13D or something like that to the fact. And I kind of remember looking over, guiding over those stipulations. And my thought was, is part of the reasoning that those guidelines are in the regulations, was that due in part to avoiding being like a public nuisance in terms of the loudness of the livestock, so you have enough sound buffer, so you're not interrupting your fellow neighbors, with various sounds, maybe at, after midnight or, just off hours, was part of the reasoning. Obviously, I wasn't part of those discussions at that time and how those came into play, but was part of the reasoning due to sound buffering.
Yes, that was the reason. That's what I remember from the discussion.
Smell was also discussed, but yeah.
Okay,
am
so
I sharing
basically
my
you're
right now? I'm trying to figure this out.
No, I'm sharing.
You're sharing. Yeah. Okay. Because that's exactly what I have up on my screen. Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, so again, basically from I don't know if it's, a good term to use, but basically public nuisance or public reason to kind of quarrel the amount of livestock or a resident has, depending on the zoning they're in.
And I agree there's a rationale behind creating the specific exemption for the keeping of hens. Cows, goats, pigs, llamas, emus, whatever that people have, and those are different issues. In the whole thought process, in my mind at least, between even asking the question, was because I do not see a substantial difference between four ducks and four chickens. I think actually chickens generate more of a smell than ducks would.
No,
that's not true. Ducks are messy.
Yeah, but I think the smell of the chicken manure and the way that they.
No.
Maybe it's subjective, but I guess, in my mind, a distinction between the two animals, to me, I'm not sure there was much of a difference when you're talking at four or five, whether it be at an acre or not, because you can have chickens on very, very small portion of land, even 2 acres. You don't even need a half an acre for six chickens.
No. The other thing is just size of the animal. I mean, a duck is twice as big as a chicken. And turkeys are three times or four times as big as a chicken. So, you know, that kind of thing. But also, I'm wondering all the big nuisance besides, you know, the sound, which are basically the roosters, or the other things, is them wandering into the street. That's the big thing, is, you know, the meandering livestock kind of thing, and the birds are notorious for that. But would that be a separate concern? You know,
it would prohibit any of that roaming. It already has language for that.
So if the roaming is taken care of and it's a small number, could you bring it up like on a case by case? You know, chickens are accepted, but if you have somebody else, can you get an exception for that, depending on?
We'd have to put in language for a waiver, I think.
I don't see the problem with having ducks versus chickens. And I don't think ducks are that much bigger than chickens, if they are at all. I don't see the problem at all.
Okay, if the staff has suggestions for language, you know, I'm sure that the commission would hear it.
Hmm. You know, hey, Mike, does the regulate?
Hens for poultry.
You know, what one possibility is simply to pull poultry out of a hut, a 2 acre, and put it into the exception. Take out chickens. That's one approach.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's different ways to deal with it, and this is something that I've begged and pleaded with other towns. Please don't start talking about chickens, because it's like it's this black hole of farm animal discussion that never ends. But you know, you can. Tolland has distinguishes between what they call small stock and large stock.
Yeah.
And if it's a small stock, you have much more flexibility. You can have actually what you might consider to be a substantial number of farm animals on a fairly small piece of property in most of Tolland. Mansfield's regulations are complicated. They're trying to fix those. Ashford doesn't regulate livestock of any kind. And in Willington, we would allow the same type of thing, smaller number of animals on smaller pieces of property. There's all different ways to do it, but I'm not sure there's a lot of pressure other than this one request.
Yeah, I would say since that regulation came into being, this is the first time I've ever heard anybody even questioning it.
So the thing about ducks is that they need a place to swim. And when I'm thinking about roaming, I'm thinking about if they don't have a source for them to swim, they will seek it elsewhere. That's how they end up in the boat.
Well, she wants to bring her ducks to her place now that she's going to live in Bolton. Yeah. Is that
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Do they have any water on the property?
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you did, like, if it's a rare case, maybe, you know, a case-by-case thing would be feasible versus...
It sounds like they're almost pet ducks.
But ducks swim. You may consider them to be pets. They consider themselves to be ducks.
I'm just saying it sounds like that she wants to bring them from wherever she's living to where she's living now.
Right.
She's got an attachment to them.
Okay.
And they're pets.
Okay.
So I don't have any problem with that. I think
so. I want to spin it back to the public side, because we are a community. And Mike, I believe you said, or Patrice, I believe one of you two said that there's already language in the regs to not, you know, to kind of remediate any type of roaming. And if you do have livestock, simple reason, because actually I do have a known situation where there are neighbors that have guinea fowl, and they, you know, sometimes chirp, but they're loud birds. So when they're kind of, when there are moments where they're, say, like, you know, coyote or something like that around and they're sitting in a chicken coop, they're loud and you're going to hear them. So if there's language that's inserted to kind of prevent the roaming aspect, so that homeowner, if they're pets, you know, is it your duty to put up barriers or supply the necessary living habitat for those livestock so they don't look to roam, say, 2 yards over or two property yards over? Is that in the guidelines already, or is that something we potentially would have to add or look into?
So currently, if you have hens, chickens, it says an appropriate building shall be required, shall include an attached or adjacent enclosure visually screened from adjacent properties to which all hens and cleanings shall be confined. And then it goes on to say all areas, buildings, and structures for the keeping and housing and pasturing of the hens shall be located in the rear of the property, shall meet the required yard setbacks, and shall be 25 feet from any existing well. So it doesn't necessarily say you can't let them roam, but what it does say is you're supposed to have an area, an adjacent enclosure to which all hens and cleaning shall be confined. And it does talk about building an area for pasturing.
Okay, so we'll ask staff for some suggestions, and then maybe we'll take it up as part of the changes, the other changes to the regulations. Was there anything else you had, Mike?
The only other thing that we did is we, when was it, Patrice? Yesterday we met with All Town Fresh. Basically planning some small little pop-up community type events, I guess you'd call them, on their property. And so they were meeting with us to just go over that. They have, I guess, people come and cook, and they provide that and offer it to people who are stopping by. And I guess they donate a substantial amount of food to the senior center and other stuff around the community. So we were meeting with them just to make sure that we understood what they were doing and that they had a plan, which they did. It falls within, you know, their outdoor dining approvals, which is allowable, and they'll be proceeding forward, but there should be some stuff happening there as it gets warmer.
Thank you. Looks like there's no old business. Looks like there's no new business. And then there's ongoing discussion, Bolton subdivision and zoning regulations. And we have a summary of comments. And I think everybody's got them. Okay. Yep. So the first one was about wetland conservation. And it basically, 450-3.7 basically duplicates or possibly interferes with the regulations of the Wetlands Commission. my memory of the reason that this is in here is the Planning and Zoning Commission at the time wanted to make sure that that limitation stayed in place even if the Wetlands Commission loosened theirs. I would have no problem with taking this section out because it is a duplication. Has anybody else thought about this one?
I see a board clerk hand up.
Yes. Is there any chance you or Mike can email me what you're looking at so I can follow along?
Sure. I got it.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Linda, I thought that you got sent this, so apologize.
The 15 pages we got emailed?
Yes. Okay.
Anybody else have any comments on this one? Okay, let's move on to the next. The next page.
So there's three items on this page.
Yeah, 450-3.8 refers to 450-8 and 450-9. Can you tell us what those say? We'll bring them up.
Sure. In fact, if you want, I can put them right back up here on the screen for you.
Yes, yes, please.
Four. 50-38, right?
Well, what I want to look at is the what it's referring to, which is 450-8 and 450-9.
All right, 8-1B. These are all the special permit lists that it's referring to, I believe.
Okay, then I understand. In other words,
so 450. I'm sorry.
In other words, it's got to be a conforming use, not a special permit use.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Okay.
So the first one is, can we just remove notwithstanding the requirements and just start the sentence with the?
Yes.
And then the second one, which talks about, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Talks about requiring a building permit. Section 105.2 in the building code lists 14 exemptions. And the one that this refers to says a fence under 8 feet high, and in 150.2 it's 7 feet high. So it's this section, and let me tell you about the building code. The state adopts a state building code, and it applies to every municipality in the state. Municipalities may not make it stricter, and they may not make it looser. And any code modification in the model code, code modifications can be granted by the local official. In the state of Connecticut, code modifications can only be granted by the Office of State Building Inspector. So I don't think, you know, what we're doing here is says a building permit shall be obtained for any building addition or structure, and you can't do that. It's just not permitted. So I think this should come out.
I think what we were considering is the language above, which is a building permit issued by the building official should be as required by the currently adopted state building code. But I don't know if we even need that language.
Yeah, what's highlighted is C.
Right. So right, but so you feel it just can come out? Do you think there needs to be anything there that says that the building permit needs to be obtained or no? I think the suggested language was the second paragraph, prior to the building or reconstruction of any structure requiring a building permit. Under the state building code, a building permit must be obtained from the building official following approval by the zoning enforcement officer, I believe was the change. If we were going to make a change, that might be appropriate.
Yeah, that language would be okay for C.
I think we got to do something in there about building permits being needed.
Now, does the comment, do we need this, apply to C, was that it?
No, the do we need this was applying to the notwithstanding, the very first one. Sorry.
Okay.
Somehow got.
That's okay. Next.
I don't know how. The third item is something we've come across a lot where, and Mike can probably speak to this better than I, but where we don't always need an A2 survey for building permits or uses of land. Sometimes a hand-drawn scaled map is okay, or if they have an A2 survey, they can hand draw on that. And those are cases, I think, when it's fairly obvious. I think we suggested a language here that it might be allowed for an accessory structure only when the proposed location is at least double the required distance to the property line, or and or adding some sort of waiver position, waiver provision where if for something is asked for that is totally unnecessary, the zoning enforcement officer or person issuing the permit would be able to say they don't need to submit that.
Yeah, I think we could have that kind of waiver language in there. I wouldn't say when the proposed location is at least double the required distances to the property lines. Whether you can get it reasonably close, I know on my property, I could just, if I wanted to, on one side, if I wanted to set something 5 feet or 10 feet off or whatever it was, I could just pull a string from the iron pin to iron pin, take a measurement, and you could be reasonably sure that that's where the building would be. On the other side, where the line goes through the pond and a swamp, you'd need an A2 survey in order to figure out where it was going to be. So I think that you could let the you could let the zoning enforcement officer or whoever was doing it
make the determine
whether they needed that, whether they needed the A2 survey or whether a hand-drawn scale map would be acceptable.
Okay. So in that case, then, maybe just a waiver provision is all you need, because the zoning enforcement officer could then say, under the waiver provision, I'm not going to require you to have an A2 survey in this case.
But I'm going to require you to have a scale map.
Yeah. What do you think, Mike? Does that work?
Yeah, I think it, I mean, the in my mind, whatever the regulations say, if I don't feel they've presented enough information for me to determine compliance, they've got to give me what I need or I don't issue the permit. So I think as long as it's clear that it's at the discretion of the person doing the review, can ask for it if I need it. 98% of the permits that we review don't have an A2. You know, the lots are so large here that in most cases, spending a couple thousand bucks on a survey when they're going to be 60 or 80 feet from a property line, certainly not a conversation I want to have with everybody who applies for a permit for a shed.
I just say this is typical. For example, try to be more our residents and future residents and businesses.
Okay, anyone else want to weigh in on this?
I
Okay, on the next page, exemptions, applications for building permits for single-family homes on lots that are not part of a subdivision are exempt from the bond requirements of the subsection C. So in other words, you want them to be subject to the bond requirements.
Applicants for building permits for a single family home on a lot that is not part of a subdivision. Okay, so they said this is saying they're exempt from a bond requirement from this
right.
section.
And if you want to take it out, it means you're subjecting them to the bond requirement.
Well, so I think it was more of a, is this necessary? Because you can't require, the statute says what you can require bonds for, and it's, and if there's no public improvements involved, we can't require a bond. So I think this is unnecessary because it's providing an exemption, which wasn't.
Can't do. Okay. Yes. Remove it.
So C for bonding is there's a bond required if certified erosion and sediment control plan is required. That you're allowed to do. It talks about the form of bond, the amount of the bond. This is really just for the ENS. It talks about the posting of the bond and releasing, inspections, drawing on the bond, and what have you. So if it's for, like Mike said, it's controlled by the statute now, and I don't think you really are can exempt, or you're not going to exempt them from ENS.
Okay.
Either it's going to be part of the subdivision plan, or it's going to be part of their individual lot plan.
Got it. On the next page, C, definitions. Yes, all definitions should be in the definition section.
So we had a small revelation after I asked this. This is the section that has to deal with flood hazards. And this section of the regulation, I believe, is governed by DEEP. So whenever you send your regulations in for flood areas and that kind of thing, they have to approve them. And they always include the definitions in their section of your regulations like this. So what I'd like to do, I may have jumped the gun by asking to do that. What I'd like to do is ask DEEP if we can put these definitions in the definition section and take them out of here. And if they say yes, great. If they say no, then I guess we're stuck with it, but
okay.
I do know the reason I brought this up when I first looked at it was because I believe base flood, I think it is also in the definition section. So it's in two places in the regulations right now, and it really only needs to be in one.
Correct.
Okay. So I will check with the powers that be, and we'll see what they say.
On the next page, 450-3.19, temporary signs. I agree, that should be in the sign provisions.
While we're chatting about signs, Mike and I both were wondering how attached you are to the sign regulations. I know it was quite an event to get them to where they are, but they are very difficult for the average person to try and figure out how much signage they can have on their property without a math degree. And we're just wondering if you're willing to allow for a revamping of any of that. It could be a lot simpler. If we understand what you'd like to allow on a property for business and whatever, I think we could do something that's not, and I don't even know how big they are, five pages, four pages, something like that.
Yes, I for one would be open to simplifying the sign regulations. I think the whole point, what prompted this was that they were just going up all over the place. Signs near the road, it was becoming an eyesore and a problem. So, but I don't.
Are you speaking about temporary signs?
I'm speaking about all kinds of signs.
All signs, okay.
And so that was why there was this push for sign regulation. And of course, as soon as you start to regulate something, all kinds of issues come up. So yes, I for one would be open to simplifying the sign regulations.
Okay. Mike, you had, when we talked about this, you had said something like most of the signs equal about a foot per foot of frontage or something when we were chatting about it overall. I mean, you've been looking at the signs permits. So there's basically wall signs, the freestanding signs, and temporary signs. Those that's what you're going to regulate. So.
Sorry, my internet is having apparently a bad day. I heard the first part of what you said.
I said when we were talking, you had mentioned something that you thought it was averaging out to about a foot of sign per linear foot of frontage or something, or foot of front of building.
Yeah, I just, you know, when, so the one that always stands out to me that I'll read is for wall signs in the neighborhood business and rural mixed use zones. It says wall signs for each occupancy shall have an area not exceeding a total of 1/4 square foot for each linear foot of building front for the first 50 feet of building front, and 1/8 of a square foot per linear foot of the building front for the next 50 feet of building front. Such calculation to be based on the front building wall of each individual occupancy. So, you know, stuff like that makes it really complicated to figure out based upon how things change and signs that are up forever. But I know in some of the signs that I've reviewed that are replacements, they seem to approximately average out to being one square foot per linear foot of building frontage. I think, yeah. And I just did a check when I hit print on that section, it was 10 pages.
Okay. Thanks. I knew it was big. I also know that we may be at a point where we're regulating beyond really what we should be regulating. So we also have had an instance or two that I can think of where the actual people who make the signs couldn't calculate what they needed to do and basically calculated something and said, can you check this? Is this right? Do we have this right? So I think it would behoove everybody if we could make it a little simpler.
Is this for all signs or just the temporaries?
I think all signage.
Yeah, I agree. Simplification, especially, you know, after listening to Mike just outlay those definitions. I mean, when you have something that's overly complex, it also makes it hard to actually enforce. And when something's hard to enforce, you really don't have a policy. You really don't have a guideline.
All right. Well, we will work on that.
Outdoor lighting.
Similar question. There's ways to simplify this. I understand that the goal is to be dark skies compliant, have as little lighting as you need to get by with that sort of thing. I don't know if it's more than that, but again, we've got a bunch of definitions in the outdoor lighting thing here, and then it goes on for, I don't know, I'm at page 5 now. So I think it could be a little simpler. Things have changed probably since this regulation was put into effect as well. I don't know what the commission's feelings are about that.
I would say keep everything as simple as we can and error really. Plus we need urgent due for the town's growth.
I'm open to simplifying it.
To what? Simplifying?
To simplifying it, yes.
Okay.
On the next page, Minor modification, that's for site plan, right?
This is for, this is just minor modifications for, minor modification of an approved site plan or special permit pursuant to Article 16, provided all changes meet the criteria requirements of this section. So the issue we've had with this is there are sometimes just things that aren't necessary that the, you know, the applicant shouldn't have to pay for, or the town shouldn't have to pay for in certain, you know, there's a lot of times where the town engineer is not, a report from the town engineer is not necessary. That takes time. It costs money. There are times we do need that. And then in those cases, it would be asked for, but either some here again, some sort of waiver provision or might solve it where, like we did before, the CEO who was in charge of this section here and issuing the modification could waive certain things. And then I think there's still a requirement that, you know, if there's a modification made, he reports it to the commission afterwards. I don't know your feelings on those.
Yeah, I would be open to a provision like that. Anybody else want to talk about that?
I thought we left that up to their discretion anyhow, so.
I mean, I think when we, any kind of minor modification is issued, you're looking at the original intent of the approval and what's, you know, if it's adding parking or lessening parking, or if it's, you know, they're adding on a touch to the building, or they're making a different size. You know, there's certain things that don't need to come back to the commission. But, you know, there's others that I think we would bring back.
And I think that some of the language that's in there is just not, I don't even think it should be there, period. I mean, if you have a minor modification to a commercial site and it's saying it can't be issued until the town engineer issues a report confirming the existing drainage structures are in good condition and functioning as designed. If you have a site that's 60 years old, no engineer that hasn't designed it is going to issue a report certifying that it's doing all of those things. And if they do, it's going to be quite costly. So I would think that if they're modifying drainage, that would be important. But if they're adding a couple of parking spaces, that seems a little bit extreme.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, show us the language you want and we'll look at it. That's what I say. Okay, on the next page.
I got one quick question before we leave this. There was a couple meetings back, I believe there was something passed or something stated where, and I'm assuming this is only applies to new construction, if a commercial building is going to have, 10 or more allocated spaces, that they need to at least lay down the groundwork for EV stuff, EV infrastructure, but not necessarily install it, but have the infrastructure available. Does that apply here as well?
Yeah,
that's a statute. So that we would not be doing anything under a minor modification that would trigger that. Any of that stuff would be before you. But yeah, that they wouldn't even through the zoning regs, they can't avoid that because it would be at the time the building permit is issued.
Okay, thanks for the clarification.
It's controlled at the building permit level, right, Mike?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, on the next page we have 450-3.24. This must be about gas station convenience stores.
This is motor vehicle sales, service, and fuel and motor oil sales. And F, okay, so this is G. G is convenience store retail trade, shall be permitted as an accessory use provided that 1, 2, 3, 4. So I just don't even know how you would enforce 3.
I think it's NFPA 30A governs the dispensing of motor fuel. And there might be language in like that in there, similar to that in there. I will look that up. Because if it is there, you don't need this. And you're not responsible for enforcing it.
Well, even if it's not there. Who's going to go out and count employees?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I do know that there are requirements when they put in new pumps that you need to be able to see a certain way, direction at the pump, so you can see the car and how they're filling it, or you need cameras or both. So I know there's that sort of thing, but I if you want to check for us, Tom, that'd be great. I just still, even if, like I said, if it's not there, I just don't know how. I don't know how you're going to enforce it.
Yeah. And I think item 4.
I have a question about that. I mean, at all town, you can go eat outside with your sandwich and your drink, and the pumps are right there. Cumberland Farms in Manchester.
Or right up the road in Coventry.
You can eat outside. I don't know.
Yeah, my guess is this is an older regulation, and we did not spot this when we were doing sort of the outdoor dining regulations, but I'm not sure why you wouldn't allow them to have an outdoor patio if they wanted one for a convenience store.
I would take that. I would take 4 out. Yeah, I'm getting agreement here at the table, so.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, farm stand. Now, are you suggesting that 1A be changed, or only that the setback standards be moved here from definitions?
Right, that's what I'm suggesting. So in the definitions, under the definition of farm stand, it defines it, and then it gives the setbacks in the definition.
You shouldn't regulate it in the definition. You just, right. All definitions say this is what it is, and then you regulate it elsewhere.
So yeah. We should move the setbacks to here, or put them in a table somewhere, right?
Yes. On the next page, D, why do we require a standalone restaurant to have a minimum of 30 seats?
This is, I believe, a regulation that's been here a long time. I'm going to guess it had something to do with your banquet facilities or something like that. But it came to light for me when Dean Cabinetry was still next to Georgina's, and he was looking at options, and he was looking at a restaurant but could not fit 30 seats, no matter how hard he tried, into there. So it kind of precluded him from doing something like that. And I'm just wondering if that's the intent, if that's what you want. And then you think about Subway, there's probably just 30 seats in there if you count all the seats in the booths. But is there a reason for that? Mike's shaking his head, which I agree. I didn't understand what the reason.
Might have been copied from someplace else. I have no objection to removing this section.
Okay.
I don't know why you'd open a restaurant. I could do that.
It just, you know, if you've got a small building and you want to have somebody, allow somebody to have a small restaurant, they really can't do it here.
Okay, on the next page, it simply refers you to the definitions, and yes, we should expect everybody to know that you should look in the definitions.
Right, so this is under the open space conservation development procedures, and I just don't think you need this in here.
Yeah. In the building code, whenever a defined term is used, it's always in italics, so you know I better go look at the definitions. I don't know whether we want to do something like that here. I found that very convenient.
I mean, I think the way we do it in zoning is, if it needs a definition, you look to the definition section of the regulations, and if it's not defined, you move on to the dictionary. Unless it's something like a building code definition or something where it can be found that way. But
well, it italicizing the defined terms lets you know that it's in the definitions, whereas if it's not there, then you need to go to the dictionary.
Yep.
Okay, so on the next page, it was something which was not added. And that's just, you're just going to take care of that.
Yeah.
Because that's routine. Okay.
Right.
On the next page, it's about filing copies. At one point, I was making an application in Berlin, and I was in a rush, and I ended up at the planning and zoning office, you know, within hours before whatever had to be submitted. And one of their requirements was that you fold them all into a certain size packet so they could mail them out. Oh, and so I was doing this. So I was doing this, and the planner comes up, and she says, "Oh, that's why we make you do that."
Wow.
So
yeah. the goal here would be to find where this is asked for, and basically, you know, everything's filed digitally now. So you go online and you file your application, and all your stuff you upload. I do think there needs to be something in here that says, you know, there are certain times when the applicant will be required to provide, you know, three sets of whatever, however many sets of, you know, full set of plans. You got a big subdivision coming. The commission's not going to want to look at it on a screen this big. So you may want a set of plans. So I think at that point, we need to be able to ask for those things. Or if it's a drainage study and somebody wants a copy of it, I think we've done that. What we're doing now, which is not in compliance with the regulations at this point, but we don't make people file 17 copies. Obviously, we'll have them put their application in, and then we usually ask for maybe a couple sets. Even the town engineer at this point is not asking for a paper copy anymore. Yeah. He's reviewing them online. So I just think the ability for the town to ask for the applicant to provide paper and how many copies should still be there, but it doesn't need to certainly be that many. And the other correction is there's somewhere in here about talking about what you need to file with the town clerk, and I'm just going to check with her and make sure that that language is correct as well, because I know that's changed over the years. I'm sorry, whoever that was, Marilee.
Well, I just had a thought that, you know, would it be necessary to have at least one hard copy stored somewhere for, not for every single thing, but for more significant plans, just to have something on hand for historic, in case we lose things through hacking or something like that. Is there anything that is stored completely online?
Absolutely every approved plan is filed in the town clerk's office.
Okay.
So it's approved and signed, it's there. And if we ever needed a copy of it, we could go in and generate it either that way or through the application.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, I mean, the last one that came to memory that was the vet and Abel Coyle, who were sort of in together with us, had several plan changes, and there was just voluminous amounts of paper and maps, and we ended up, you know, unfortunately, ended up throwing out a lot of it when they were all done and had the approved final version. Yeah. So I hate to have it, you know, cost them money and time, and it's really for what reason?
As long as we have a history, you know, something other than just in the club.
Yeah, I would.
Yes.
I would think you ought to give them a little information, say, you know, we reserve the right to require up to 5 print copies, just in case a member wants them or they need to be publicly displayed or something like that.
Yep.
And
sounds good.
And for peace of mind, usually the systems that people submit electronic versions of a document to, these systems are usually backed up with disaster recovery mechanisms in place. Obviously, we don't control that. Whoever, you know, does the vending for us, or whoever does the, you know, the software side, those are usually backed up with, you know, that disaster recovery mediums in place.
Right.
Okay, on the next page, it's application referrals.
Right, so this is the section for, I think both speak to this. This is special permit in rural mixed zones, but this appears in several places. And I just, not all of, I think it should be more of, you know, there's referrals that are required by the state statutes. And then there's the referrals that the commission may want to have. I don't think there's anything that requires you referring something to the Bolton Lakes Regional Water Pollution Control Authority, but there are times when you're going to want that.
Yeah.
So I feel like this should be more of the, as opposed to the commission shall refer, the commission may refer. And at your discretion, you know, Conservation Commission doesn't always have to be referred to the, you know, I just feel like there should be a little leeway here.
I think changing shall to may would solve the problem. Mm-hmm. Okay. And the other pages are the things we've already talked about.
Right. The one thing that's not on here that I think my staff has talked about is to take the requirements for site plan and the requirements for special permit, which I believe appear more than once under different sections of the regulation, and maybe make them one section. So if you're going to apply for a site plan, you go to that section. You're going to apply for a special permit, you go to that section. And that was just sort of more of a reorganizing of the regulations, sort of in keeping with that table that we all looked at ahead of time. I still have all that as well. So the idea is these are without the architectural guidelines at the end, these are 200 pages. And it just seems like if we could cut a quarter of that, I'm aiming for more, but if you can cut a quarter of that and reorganize them so they're simple, easier to use and easier to find things in, but yet you still have the same regulations or requirements that you're trying to get at, I think it would help everybody.
I agree.
Yeah. Was there anything that anybody else had come up with that they have either had have issue with or want us to look at?
So you think this will make us more, make the town of Bolton look more interested in growth, as our other towns might be, instead of looking at a cumbersome process to get anything through? Step in the right direction. I just don't know how the other towns are doing growth, how we compare. Mike knows. I don't know how the towns would compete with.
I think I've mentioned this before. I mean, the stuff that we're doing in Mansfield, we've done in Tallinn, any regulation that I draft, I mean, I try to push the commissions that I'm working with to that point where they're, you know, at the edge of their comfort level, because regulations at this point are not going to encourage any development to come forward unless they were already coming forward. These regulations aren't going to facilitate development, but they are going to impact how those people feel about development and what they tell other developers. So I think the regulations, you know, should be flexible and nimble, because you don't know what you have until someone knocks on Patrice's door and says, I'm thinking about doing X, Y, and Z. And if you want that project, you've got to have regulations that are, that can accept it. And the only way to do that is to dial them back a little bit. That's not how it's been for the last 25 years, but you know, you can't pull projects out of the sky anymore. That's just not how it works.
It's a step in the right direction. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, absolutely.
Well, hopefully good news with travel.
Yep. For sure.
Yeah. If you can streamline it and make something a little bit more effective, it's a good, in my opinion, it's a good approach, because you don't want to be, you know, operating on obsolete guidelines. And if you're fluid, like you mentioned, Mike, and you're flexible, but yet still able to convey what needs to be conveyed, to protect and make sure things are safe, you're definitely heading in the right direction.
Oh, we're also fulfilling one of the goals of the plan of conservation and development when we talked about this, trying to streamline the way things work. So we'll get together some suggested language on the things for that, and start setting this up so that maybe we can take it all to a public hearing, and then after that move on from there to the next part of it. I think maybe some little baby steps might be the way to do this.
As a board, we have not discussed the table that you passed out earlier. That table is now in the revised regulations.
It is the which table?
It was a table of special permit, site plan, that whole.
Oh, it is not in the regulations.
Okay, I would like to. Do you want to do that after we change the modify the codified regulations, or do you want to do that as part of this initial effort?
So to change the table is also going to mean to change, like I just said, the sections about the site plan and the special permit. I don't know. I suppose we could do it all in one big chunk. What do you think, Mike, would work best?
So I think he's just asking to have the table incorporated into the reg. So if we just had, or am I misunderstanding? We just want to have the table for reference, right?
Well, the table right now is completely different from what is actually allowed right now. Like for special permit, you've got A through V here that you need a special permit in the RMUZ. But when you look at the table that we talked about, not all of these things were things that the commission thought would require a special permit. Am I saying that right, Tom?
Yes.
Okay. So if we were to incorporate the table, we're going to have to change all of the zones and the special permit stuff.
So we don't have an original of the table that just...
Oh, I do. I have it.
Yeah. So we could start with that.
Okay. Or you just eliminate the lists in the various zones and you refer to the table.
Yep.
Oh, okay. So I would like the board to, because since we've had it passed out to us and we haven't discussed it, I would like to discuss that at the next meeting as part of this ongoing discussion.
I will also resend it just so everybody has it.
Okay. I was just going to ask, is this this table, is this actually emailed out?
Right, Quan. Actually, you had made some comments on it.
Yeah, I remember this is, I believe, an exercise we took up at some point in the fourth quarter of last year. At least it started. Yep, okay.
Yes, board clerk.
Can you add me to that email list as well?
Absolutely, Linda. I'm sorry. I usually send you everything. It somehow got away from me for this thing. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
I think we're finished with that discussion. Was there any correspondence?
I just asking if anybody had plans or wanted to attend the annual conference for CFPZA on Thursday, March 28th. I hadn't heard from anybody, so I assume nobody was interested in attending, or am I wrong? That was at the AquaTurf, March 28th at 5 o'clock social hour, 6 o'clock dinner, 7:15 awards presentation, 8 o'clock topic was short-term rentals. What can be done by municipal land use agencies to control the use of land?
I have no
That's idea. A long, long, are they giving out energy drinks?
Good question. I don't know. All right. I will take that as a no.
And with that, Diane.
I move to adjourn.
I second.
Move D'Annunzio, second Marilee Manning. All in favor say aye.
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 And I have 8:38.
Oh, correct.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Good night, everyone.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Bye.
Take care.